Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 8:01 p.m. and that is Mountain Time. Today is June 29th, and we're coming towards the end of the first half of the year. So I think there's a bit of people just reassessing where they want to be. And the Nikkei, having rallied very impressively 2 days ago, is starting to give up at that advance, and it's down about 200 points in early trading in Asia right now. So it has rallied very impressively from 29,000 to 34,000 in the space of only about 8 weeks, and that's quite overbought in the short term, and it is likely that we'll see some consolidation. I'd been hoping that it would get up towards that 35,000 level. It may yet do that, but we might see some consolidation first. And this trend over the course of the last decade has been characterized by 5,000 point breakouts, followed by years of ranging. Now, that kind of consistency isn't going to last indefinitely, but there's no reason to believe that it's over. Now, one of the reasons why the Nikkei has been so firm is because the yen has been devaluing. And this trend is ebbing, but it's still in place. So the Bank of Japan is in a tight position. They don't want to have to raise interest rates, or they don't want to withdraw the liquidity, because they're still worried that the inflation that they finally have now, that's beginning to break out of a long-term range, might be transient. And considering the fact that they've been chasing inflation for decades, then now that they've got it, they're not going to let it slip away. But the rest of the world is not quite in the same boat. And then, of course, we have China. China's government bond market is rather interesting, because there are two rather important ways of characterizing the activity. Well, bond yields are going down. So if bond yields are going down, generally that means there's more demand for bonds. And on top of that, what it also suggests is that there are potentially deflationary forces underway. Now, when we also think about that, well, there is this view as well that because China is a creditor nation, because they have ample foreign currency reserves, that their debt is golden, and therefore it should be bought, and particularly that the Chinese government bonds have been very strong because they don't have the inflation problem that the rest of the world has. Well, they don't have that inflation problem because they didn't stimulate. So I think there is a budding cottage industry in trying to figure out why did inflation get out of control during the pandemic. And there'll be lots of academic articles and PhDs written about it, but I think we can just simply look around the world and just view with very simple eyes what was done and what worked and what didn't work. Well, we know that, for example, in Japan, they've been trying to reignite inflationary pressures by printing lots of cash for a long time. It hasn't worked because, on the one hand, they had this massive overhang of over-leverage in the banking sector, and it's taken years to unwind. But then we were in a global disinflationary period as well, so it was very hard to get inflation going. And we've seen, for example, that a lot of the Japanese manufacturing companies, that they set up manufacturing operations overseas, and that was one of the ways that they insulated themselves. So the autonomy kind of way of managing a business, becoming a truly global, I guess a global citizen type company, is something that a lot of the Japanese companies have been practicing for quite a long time. Then you had what happened in China. They went through the pandemic. What do? They basically locked down the entire country, told people that they had to stay at home, and then they did not provide a lot of assistance, and they forced people to rely on their savings. And of course, the domestic savings rate has been high for a long time, so people actually had savings. And because they were not allowed to travel overseas, then there was no leakage of cash outside the country. So, by not printing a lot of money and by subsequently trying to prick the housing bubble rather than having an inflating housing bubble like we've seen elsewhere, then China has been able to keep inflation under control. And that is the primary reason I think that the bond yield is still right in the region of its lows. And the fact that those yields are still compressing, that is, I think, about as much evidence that we could require that the People's Bank of China is not stimulating. So that's important. Now let's just think about, well, what's happened in Europe? On the one hand, Europe has a big inflation issue right now because they had to not only print a lot of money to help to pay the wages of people that were told to stay at home during the pandemic, then they also had to issue a huge amount of money to buy a ton of gas for the or to provision the European economy because of the moratorium on buying gas from Russia. So natural gas prices went to the moon and back last year because there was price insensitive buying. There was money literally being printed to buy gas with no regard for what it cost because it was a panic situation that the continent could actually run out. So we had this incredible advance. It's now coming back down and we're getting back into levels that haven't really been seen since before the invasion. And at having rebounded to test the region of the 1,000-day moving average, we're also now starting to see that fail and prices starting to come back down. And then we can think about what did the USA do? They've also had a problem with inflation. So they printed an amount of money that was literally mind-boggling during the pandemic. And they gave it out to people and told them to go off and spend, and that's exactly what people did. So we got what's been being called the bullwhip effect, where everything went down first, then came back up, and it's going to take time to shake out and to even out again. Well, I drove straight across Texas today, and one of the interesting things is that the freeway goes straight down through the middle of Midland, Texas, and all of the trucks that supply the shale drilling operations in the region find their way onto that highway. So it's a boom town. There is just a huge number of trucks that make their way along that highway, and we got stuck behind a workshop that was being ferried down the highway on the back of an articulated truck today. It took up all the lanes, and it really looked like a house, but of course it was a workshop that was being moved. And huge pieces of machinery are on the move all the time there. So when we think about the economic recovery that occurred in the USA as a result of that vast volume of cash thrown at the market, well, it resulted in a massive jump in oil price, and subsequently prices have come back down. Now the price is steady here around the $74 level, and there's obviously lots of arguments about what should happen with the price. Should it go up from here or down from here? The US government, for example, is buying for the strategic reserve. But I think let's just still frame everything that we're talking about in terms of this fight against inflation. The USA printed tons of money, gave it to lots of different people, and told them to spend. That's exactly what they did. We had a huge economic recovery. Then inflation took off like wildfire, and the Federal Reserve has been more aggressive than other central banks in raising interest rates. So that has put a cap on yields. And the 10-year yield is still hovering here around the 3.8% level. Now, it was in positive territory today. And that is on the back of the belief at this stage that the Federal Reserve might yet raise rates two more times. And of course, that would put upward pressure on the short end of the curve. It will also tighten liquidity even further. So the USA is definitely trying to get inflation under control. And so far, they haven't broken anything. There have been several issues with banks, but because the larger banks passed their stress test with flying colors, then those banks were in positive territory today. And it suggests that they're not likely to have greater liquidity rationing imposed upon them. So that's allowed the prices to rebound somewhat. But we're still in an environment where interest rates are rising and liquidity conditions are tightening. Now, let's just think about what's happening in Brazil. So they raised rates not just aggressively, they raised rates twice as fast as the USA has done. And that has allowed inflation to contract really quite meaningfully. And it's beginning to come back down into what might be an acceptable range. So the Brazilian stock market is beginning to price in the potential that they'll be among the first to begin to cut rates and announce a victory over inflation. So we can then just raise some or just draw some very simple conclusions. The first is China didn't print the money. They didn't have an inflation problem. Japan printed the money, but not in nearly as an aggressive a manner as either Europe or the USA did. And then Europe printed the money, and they're still dealing with the inflation, and they haven't been as aggressive as others as in raising rates. But they are having an issue with some of the end markets for the goods they export running into trouble, which of course is China. And then you have the USA, which was more aggressive than Europe in raising rates, also more aggressive in printing cash. And they're beginning to get inflation under control, but it's not done yet. And it looks like they will have to continue to work on it. But we have seen in Latin America, where they were exceptionally aggressive in beating down inflation, that they are coming close to declaring victory. So I think that's certainly one of the lessons that we have here, that you can get in control of inflation, but the measures that have to be taken in order to do it are exceptionally aggressive. And of course, you don't have the same degree of personal leverage within the consumer sector or the property sector in Brazil as you do in many other countries. And one of the inhibiting factors that you have in countries like Australia and the UK is the fact that fixed rate mortgages are rolling off, and that is going to have a significant effect on consumers, but not right away. So it's beginning to happen in the UK. It's likely to be more of a late 2023-2024 issue for the Australian market. And then you have the student loan question in the USA, which is if the moratorium excuse me, if the forbearance ends as planned in August and repayments on those loans begin in October, then it's going to have a negative effect on consumers beginning in October, and which will probably show up in economic statistics at the beginning of 2024. Now, of course, if the debt forgiveness issue is knocked down by the Supreme Court, then that means that a lot of those people who are going to have to start paying back those loans are going to have to eat into their savings. So if the savings are spent down in a more aggressive fashion, then that is going to accelerate the pass-through mechanism for raising interest rates. So there's certainly a lot to think about here. So gold prices are back in the region of the $1,900 area and beginning to steady. We're in the region of the 200-day moving average. And we're at the point now where I think central banks are on the cusp of actually making a mistake and tightening too much. Because we've already seen that inflation has peaked and it's likely to eventually start to come back down. But they're convinced that consumers need to experience pain, and they're well on the way to inflicting that pain. Now, eventually, they're going to have to realize that they've gone too far and cut interest rates, and it's at that point that gold prices will start to look much more attractive to more people. Whereas when we think about what's happening in the Bitcoin market right now, we have very interesting activity because the price has rebounded very impressively back to test the peaks from back in April. And people are speculating that there is going to be an ETF. Now, as soon as the precedent is set, then we're going to have legions of asset management firms opening their own ETFs. Coinbase is likely to be one of the beneficiaries from that because it will both act as a custodian as well as affecting some of the transactions. So the share is rebounding. Now, obviously, it also has these lawsuits overhanging, and that is not something that has been solved just yet. But it's the only one of the crypto exchanges that is large enough to tackle the kind of flow that would come from the permissioning of ETFs. And there isn't another. Now, the one reason that I favor Coinbase over others is simple, that they are or they have foregone the temptation to create their own token. And Binance has their own token. They do a lot of the transactions via their own token. And if we just simply think about that in terms of a vested interest, and are they truly acting as a custodian without a vested interest if they own the coin and they benefit from the token that is used for transactions? Now, that alone should be a disqualifying characteristic. And it's also one of the reasons why so many of the crypto exchanges have gone bust, because they haven't been able to avoid the temptation of creating their own token and gaining all of that additional cash. Coinbase has, and because of that, then they're in a preferential position, even if they still have some of these court cases hanging over them. Now, as we think then about what's happening with the artificial intelligence market, the Nasdaq index is still pausing here around the 15,000 level. It is not moving in a dynamic manner, but it was in mildly negative territory in here today. I would just also highlight that the transportation index has been really quite firm, and it popped on the upside yesterday and followed through on the upside in here today. Having looked at all the trucks that are moving around Texas on this long drive today, Old Dominion was one of the really present companies that are moving stuff or from well from east to west in Texas, and the share has rebounded very emphatically. Now, what they do is mostly move freight via truck around the USA. And that still seems to be a profitable business, and the share has been up in a very emphatic fashion over the course of the last week. Now, it doesn't mean that every company is that successful. And what I do think is underway right now is a winnowing, and there's clear evidence of some companies doing much better than others. And I think we're going to come out of this consolidation phase with a smaller group of bigger companies, and the also-rans are probably just going to disappear. And we're beginning to see that in the electric vehicle companies as well. So, we saw this week that Lordstown has gone bust, and then Lucid Group signed a deal with Aston Martin, and they're going to produce batteries for Aston Martin's new electric vehicles. So the share is beginning to find support, but we're talking about really depressed levels, and Aston Martin is also benefiting. It's been one of the best performing shares in the UK and over the course of this year. Obviously, coming from exceptionally depressed levels, but it is rallying in a reasonably consistent manner and is up by multiples since the low back in October. Now, I'm going to be spending some time on the road tomorrow as well, but not nearly as much. And I did have a typo in my note yesterday. I said I'd be back in August. I really did mean to say July. I'm going to be in Ireland and the UK for much of August, and for much of July and August. With that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.